It's time once again for Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM. Stacey, I think we're doing some fundraising.
Yeah, that's what I want to ask right now. Put down the radio, turn off the radio, go to resonancefm.com and donate. Donate, donate. And actually, if you go to Resonance FM, there are all sorts of auction sort of things you could bid on, and it all goes to charity.
Oh, yeah, well, Resonance, by some measures, is the best radio station in the world. So when you give Resonance a few quid, you're participating in excellence in a way that you ordinarily don't get a chance to do. I mean, think about it. Typically, you might give money to some pub owner or some Wonga payday lender or some off-license vodka seller. None of those things add up to anything good, do they? But here, you put in £5 and you know you're part of something that's great.
Exactly. The official fundraiser, annual fundraiser, runs from the 9th through the 15th of February. And so we'll also be doing this next weekend. In fact, next weekend we'll be recording from Leeds. So if you happen to be in Leeds, maybe we'll do some sort of, give £100 to resonancefm.com. And not only is it tax deductible, if you are a UK taxpayer, you can increase the value of your donation by 25%. So in fact, if you give £100, you'd be giving £125. And if for £100, you could join us for coffee, maybe. We'll do something like that in Leeds City Centre.
I love Leeds. Nevertheless, we will be there, and I have no idea what Leeds is about. I've never been anywhere near Leeds. I'm looking forward to visiting Leeds. I'm sure there are many listeners in Leeds. Of course, Leeds is up near Sheffield. I have been to Sheffield, and now I'm going to be at Leeds. So, yeah, let's get together. Let's have a meetup. Let's have a coffee. Let's meet up. Let's do it.
Also, you know what? There's a really cool... as of 1 p.m. today, you were able to buy tickets for Max in Brighton at the Green Door. That'll be on March 6th. So if you want to go to maxkaiser.com, all the information will be there. But Max, a Gauguin painting has sold for nearly $300 million, making it the most expensive art ever sold. What's going on?
More of the same. So you have this transference of you have money printing, so there's about $60 trillion that's been printed since the crisis of 2008 by the world's central banks, and almost all of it has gone into the pockets of a few people that then, not knowing what to do with all this money, they don't hire folks and pay them a decent wage, they don't build factories, they don't do anything in the real economy. They say, you know what? I've got £300 million sitting here in my bank account that was given to me from the Bank of England or the Federal Reserve Bank or the European Central Bank. And, what should I do with it? I know. I'll buy this Gauguin painting for £300 million. And that's what I'll do with it. So it's a symptom of this extraordinarily broken global financial system where the printers of the money are causing this kind of deflation in most of the economy. The Greek economy is collapsing. The UK economy is in many ways deflating. It's around the world. The Europeans certainly is in a deflationary spiral because the money that's being printed to try to revive these economies just goes into the pockets of a few folks that are not lending it out to stimulate growth, or they're not buying or building factories. They're buying paintings for £300 million. So this will continue on for another year or so, because it looks like the 10-year Treasury bond in America will continue to hit new highs over the next 12 to 18 months, according to Felix Zuloff, a good smart guy up there in Switzerland. So this current this current cycle has another 18 months to run.
So who bought the painting? Well, it appears it was Cutter. Cutter, who has bought all of most of London, half of central London, and almost every single major commercial bridge building. And I just saw the word bridge. And so this is part of that money printing, because, of course, where did all that money printing go but to war? And war went towards bombing oil-rich nations in order to make sure that China could never compete with America, that they were not just able to secure oil resources and, you know, become the bigger power than America. So here you have, you know, Qatar, who has benefited from this war on terror, probably why they're helping to sponsor the likes of ISIS, because it's been so profitable for them. And they're buying up all your sovereignty. You might not know it, but this is what they're doing. And this is, you know, they're paying $300 million for this because, of course, this world of oligarchs are finding it hard to find any sort of assets remaining in which to, you know, launder their money or hold it outside of the fiat system, of course. So, you know, there are only so many $100 million apartments in New York or London or Hong Kong. And then they could turn to art, you know, which has the benefit of if there's a revolution, well, when there's a revolution in their country and all the poor rise up and try to grab them and do whatever to them, at least, you know, somebody from the family might be able to roll up the painting and run away with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see that the rope used to hang Saddam Hussein is now at auction, and the current bid is $7 million.
So, again, it's probably the Qatar royal family.
Mm-hmm. So this is what people are spending their money on, because if you're one of the group that received $60 trillion in free cash from the central banks, and you already have three homes and 12 boats and, you know, you just run out of stuff to buy, really. So you go to the novelty market, whether it's a Gauguin at 300 million pounds, or the rope that hung Saddam Hussein for $7 million. So the novelty business is booming. So tchotchkes and novelties, you know, houses on cliffs and yachts with glass swimming pools, these types of novelties are doing well. The actual day-to-day economy of labor, jobs, and tax collection, not so good.
Yeah. Remember, Saddam Hussein hung by, you know, with the support of a load of unelected royals who were offended at the unelected dictator of Iraq. Well, you know, none of us ever see that stuff. So let's talk about the global economy, Max. The big story, of course, is Greece. Where 9 out of 10 of the population watching BBC News or something will say that it's the people's fault there, and we bail them out. So we've been talking about this over the past week as Yanis Varoufakis takes control of the finance ministry of Greece, and of course, having spoken to him for many years on Kaiser Report, we're far ahead of any of the competition, Channel 4 News or BBC News or anything like that, because we already know what his opinion is and how he formed it and what he thinks about this debt from Europe and all these bonds that can't be paid. So what do you think is how Yanis Varoufakis is doing in his negotiations with the various European leaders and Merkel and these bailouts, that 90% of the bailout funds went to bailing out actually German and French banks and other European banks, but primarily German and French banks?
That's good. He's got a great position because he knows that he's perfectly willing to be booted out of the euro, and that would be the greatest thing Greece could have anyway. So he's going to make demands, and Germany will reject those demands, and they'll get booted out of the euro, And they'll bring back the drachma, which will be the greatest thing that could happen to Greece. And it's just like Iceland let their banks collapse. And now, they're off and running. And that whole period is behind them. So Greece needs to let their banks collapse. And the loser in all this will be the ECB and its member banks, who are all extraordinarily leveraged. You know, the ECB, like the Federal Reserve Bank, is leveraged 50 or 60 to 1. The biggest bank in Germany, Deutsche Bank, is leveraged 200 to 1. And so these guys can't afford to let income-producing, asset-generating Greece fall off the map, because it would mean their Ponzi scheme gets challenged in a meaningful way. So Yanis understands this perfectly. And so the people of Greece have put him and the president in charge. And now, as I've said before, we're going to have a showdown. So Yanis is succeeding where Occupy did not succeed, and the Umbrella Revolution in Hong Kong hasn't really succeeded, and none of these campaigns around the world that have tried to take on the banksters have succeeded, except for Iceland. So Greece is going to succeed. This is good news.
And it's remarkable, actually, that across the spectrum, the political ideological spectrum from left to right, most people seem to agree that they need to default on these bonds. And, you know, throughout history, from the beginning of time, it's always been a two-way contract. You know, one person lends and the other person borrows. And usually, actually, there's more responsibility on the lender to know that they're lending to somebody who's going to pay them back. I certainly very rarely lend money because I have very few people I know are actually worthy of paying you back. But, you know, you want to make sure you're going to be paid back. And that's why, you know, if you're in the business of lending and taking deposits, you should know what you're doing. Now, we cover this on the Kaiser Report this week, Max, that there was a statement by the head of a Nordic banking association where he said outright that banks in the Nordic area don't need to take deposits and they don't need to make loans because they have plenty of liquidity, and therefore they could start charging for people to have a savings account. They won't pay interest. In fact, you have to pay them interest to keep your savings. So he said, we don't need deposits and we don't need to make loans.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what is a bank there to do? If they're not taking deposits and they're not making loans, what exactly is the point of having these institutions around? There is no point. They've just insinuated themselves into the system, and they're holding the system hostage, and they're extorting huge giveaways from the central banks. And this is obviously a problem when the parasites have consumed the host entirely and choking people who are being scapegoated. So more cops gun down kids in America. More people go to jail in the UK. More rights are being grabbed. More spying. More militarization. The only job people can get now, if you're a young person, is to join the military. Well, why is that? Because the real economy has been destroyed by the military people. So it is the cycles come and go. I mean, this is just another cycle. Now, but like I said, I think that we've got another year to 18 months of the cycle, because in order to finance all this chicanery, you need lower and lower rates for you to extend and pretend, as the saying goes. And those lower rates are coming. So, as you point out, in some cases they're going negative. So negative rates. If people pay the bank to take their money, that's called wealth confiscation, just like that happened in Cyprus, just like happened in fascist countries in the 30s in Europe. They just took people's money, just like, MF Global and Jamie Dimon just confiscated people's money. So these banks are saying, hey, you've got some money in our bank. We're just going to take some. And if you don't like it, then you're a terrorist. under this new rule. And if you complain, we're going to put you in jail. And we own the jail, so we're going to make money that way too. So it's going to, you know, it can't, you know, things that can't continue, you know, don't continue.
Now, if you go to nakedcapitalism.com, there's an interesting piece called What Thomas Piketty and Larry Summers Don't Tell You About Income Inequality. And there's a new paper for the Institute for New Economic Thinking working group on the political economy of distribution. So economist Lance Taylor and his colleagues examined income inequality using new tools and models that give us a more nuanced and frightening picture than we've had before. So basically, first of all, their simulation shows that income inequality, especially in America, is actually worse than most people realize, and that the so-called reasonable modifications that Thomas Piketty and others have been suggesting since Piketty's book came out, like modest tax increases on the wealthy and boosting low wages, are not going to be enough to stem the disproportionate tide of income rushing toward the rich. For example, he says, you know, in the U.S. right now, because of all this income inequality concern, they're thinking of raising the tax on the wealthy, the very wealthiest, by 1%. He said, you know, it would need to basically their burden would need to double in order to have any sort of impact. But one of the things that I found quite interesting is what their research showed is that, you know, part of the reason why the income inequality became so drastic in America was that basically the incomes of the top 1%, the CEO class, just soared since beginning from Reagan and onwards, and without any commensurate, you know, productivity in the CEO class. They didn't do anything more than they did in 1975, for example, and yet in 1975, a CEO's comparable pay was 10 times lower than a CEO today. And he also said, so the labor market is also messed up, and that the U.S. ranks low on employment protection, expenditure on active labor market policy, and collective bargaining. But he says social attitudes and political decisions are the reason why. So the population themselves, unlike, say, the population in Greece, doesn't want things to change. The population in Greece, the population in Spain are doing something about it. But the population itself in America is still not reached any sort of willingness to change things. Again, because I think it's because of this atomization in America, but also more of the, you know, racism and hatred towards your neighbor rather than concern about a growing oligarchy, because the oligarchy are so removed beyond anything you experience.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I absolutely agree with that.
So what do you think about this Channel 4's Kathy Newman? So a week ago, she claimed to have attended one of these open days at the hashtag Visit My Mosque. And she tweeted, well, I just visited Streatham Mosque for Visit My Mosque Day and was surprised to find myself ushered out of the door. I was respectfully dressed, head covering and no shoes, but a man ushered me back onto the street. I said I was there for Visit My Mosque, but it made no difference. So this generated huge headlines in the news and in the papers across the UK, and they were like, oh my God, these Muslims, they're sexist, they're horrible, they strong-armed this woman out of the mosque, they didn't want this blonde woman in there. Well, the Huffington Post managed to secure the CCTV footage, and what they found, in fact, was that it was an outright lie. In fact, she had gone in there, looked around confused. A whole bunch of men rushed past her on their way into the prayers late. One of the guys stopped to help her, pointed to the left, and then she stood there still confused after he rushed into prayers. And it turns out it was just not even anybody to do with the mosque other than somebody attending the prayers. And he thought she was looking for the church, which is two buildings down, pointed her to there. So anyway, it was fabricated. Also, this week we saw in the mainstream media...
All right, let's talk about that. So this woman who works at Channel 4, she claimed to be ushered out of the mosque You know, and this made national news and plays into the narrative that Muslims are, you know, antisocial and not integrating. And this has been proven through the CCTV camera to be false. So Kathy Newman lied. You know, she outright lied to folks about what happened. Channel 4 ran with the story, didn't bother to check the facts. And they're flaming this kind of Islamophobia. They're flaming it because presumably when there's violence, they get bigger ratings. So Kathy Newman is a violence provoker. And so is she going to stay at Channel 4 after this blatant miscarriage of her duties as a journalist? Or are they going to try to sweep this under the rug? That's my question.
At the same time, as I was saying, Brian Williams at NBC, with the lead anchor on NBC News in America, he's also been caught this week fabricating a total lie, a total story that he was in some helicopter in Iraq during the war, and it was shot at, and they had to make an emergency landing. And every telling of the story, including to your friend Alec Baldwin, got more and more elaborate. Anyway, finally, the actual soldiers there at the time have called him on it, and he wasn't anywhere near this helicopter. And in fact, he was far away. He was in another group that came in soon after them, a half an hour later. I think this is... these people perhaps truly believe it. They don't even know they're fabricating it, in a way, that they're so caught up in the propaganda. And in the case of NBC News, of course, it was owned by GE. I don't know if it still is, but one of the biggest beneficiaries in America of not only bailouts in the financial system, but also war. They're a huge, major component of the war machine. So here he is, caught up in this hype of pro-war propaganda.
Okay, so it's pro-war propaganda, and who are these wars against?
Muslims.
Islam. So once again, there's a problem with...
I don't think it's against Islam. I think it's conveniently... I think just
well,
because...
Well, I'm trying to make a point here, and then you can have a comment. So it seems that there are this, again, a news organization, a major news organization, supporting wars. These wars are against... people who follow the Quran, who are worshiping Allah, who some call Islamic and some call Muslimic, those are the people that are being murdered. They get the drones in Pakistan and whatnot. They're being murdered. The Channel 4 is bombing them. The NBC News in America is bombing them. So you got Brian Williams, you got Kathy Newman. They support this narrative that we, and Fox News, of course, came out 2 weeks ago and said, we should bomb them, we should kill them. That was their lead editorial. Let's murder them. Okay, so then they ask, then they wonder, they say, why did 9/11 happen? Why did the Charlie Hebdo thing happen? We're just innocent victims. We just sit around and pet each other all day and sing Kumbaya. We have no responsibility whatsoever. And yet, they spend zillions of dollars propagandizing against Islam, and, you know, which is okay, you know, do what you have to do. But my point is, when they get hit back, when somebody slaps you back, don't start crying like a little baby. Cowboy up!
So why aren't they droning Malaysia and Indonesia? Those are the most populous, that's where most Muslims live.
Well, they probably didn't get a contract for this. Remember, they're profiteering. They're the profiteers. They'll take the money, and they use that money to go buy Gauguin's for £300 million. Above all, it's about money. So the money is first, and then they'll find some scapegoat. In this case, you know, the Muslims are the new Jews. They're the scapegoat. So they find the new scapegoat, they go kill them, and they take the money. You know, that's the key. That's the truth about markets, is that money corrupts. And when you give away $60 trillion from central banks to the worst amongst us, the most psychopathic, then they'll figure out a way to victimize and scapegoat an entire multi-billion, group of folks to take the cash.
Well, you know, I think the fact that the Muslims that are being vilified happen to live upon oil is a huge factor in this, because you can't become a dominant power without energy. One needs energy to become the dominant power. And in the policy for a new American century, documents written by the likes of Rumsfeld and Cheney back in the late 1990s when they were calling for Bill Clinton to invade Iraq. Why they were saying we needed to invade Iraq was because of China. They said we can't let China have access to this energy or have access to these resources, like be the primary dealer on this. You know, we could sell it to them, but we need Chevron or Exxon to have the primary contract to own the resources. So I think that has something to do with it. And but anyway, it's all the propaganda, like I'm saying, the propaganda that sold Americans on refusing to fight for their own rights. They fight for the rights of the likes of Conrad Hilton, who had emerged this week, you know, this 21-year-old, one of the heirs to the Hilton fortune, went berserk on a British Airways flight and saying he was going to freaking kill all the peasants on the plane and all you stupid peasants, get out of my way. And, you know, I think most Americans, even though they're in the bottom 99.9%, will agree. Yes, we should die for this man.
Interesting segue. So, but getting back to the propaganda issue, you know, in the UK, you hear this drone on and off over and over again that somehow news outlets like the BBC are not propaganda, which is false. And somehow that they criticize other networks in other countries for having a point of view that reflects those countries. You know, if you go to India and you go into a restaurant, you're going to eat Indian food. You know, you're not going to find a big fry-up English breakfast in the middle of Bombay, you know, in a neighborhood that doesn't have any English-style novelty restaurants. If it's Indian, you're going to find Indian. If you go to, you know, China, you're going to find Chinese food. If news organizations in various countries have broadcast news, it's coming out of those countries. And same thing with Britain. Britain and the BBC, their flagship news, reflects Britain. It is a British, it reflects Westminster. It has as high a bias toward the interests of Westminster and the Queen as any news organization in any country, you could argue, have as an interest that reflects the culture and the politics of that country. And the idea that the BBC is somehow magically impartial, that they are unique in all the world in just giving the unvarnished truth with any bias whatsoever, it's an absurd claim that has no basis and is being proven wrong every single day. This Kathy Newman story is just yet another example. She's over at Channel 4, but the same thing applies to BBC. These news organizations in the UK, they support war. They support austerity, which is bankrupting millions of people. They support the anti-Islam meme, which is causing enormous blowback. And therefore the basis for the removal of civil rights and the introduction of the surveillance state. So these people are really dangerously corrupt.
And that's it for this episode of The Truth About Marcus. And I do want to note that Andrew Neil of the BBC's Daily Politics show every day of the week, and he was mocking Russia Today for renaming themselves RT. And Max did point out earlier that the BBC stands for British Broadcasting Network Corporation, and NBC stands for National Broadcasting Corporation, and ABC stands for American Broadcasting Corporation, but they don't mock that, do they? So that's it for this episode of The Truth About Marcus. And remember, this week is the fundraising week for ResonanceFM.com. Go to ResonanceFM.com and you'll find all the ways to donate.
Bye, y'all.